Hi everyone, it is Thursday, May 4th, 2023. Welcome to Tectio Quick Takes. I'm your host, Alex Riley, and here are today's headlines. A big raise that may or may not happen. We'll get into that. Super.com raises a supersize round, interpreting some different bad news and what it implies for Canadian tech. And finally, for our lightning round, we'll review more raises and announcements that we're making news over the last few weeks to help me break it all down. Alex Norman joins me. Hey, Alex.
Hey Alex, it looks like today might be the first non-rainy day in a couple of weeks.
Yes, I know. We've seen the sun a little bit. I think it's supposed to be nice into the weekend and next week, so that's good. Have a variety of things we want to talk about today, good news and bad news. Before we get into that, there is some breaking news that I think we should really dive into. So Shopify making an announcement this morning that they're laying off 20% of their global workforce, obviously impacting their logistics operations. So there's not much known about this news, as you know, just from what we've seen so far. So if you could just dive into, what is the news there and why do you think they're compelled to do this? This is the second round of cuts that they've made since last July.
Again, this news. So today was the day for quarterly earnings report. And before they started basically the morning with an announcement that they're laying off 20% of workforce and they're exiting the logistics business by selling to Flexport. I think why do they feel compelled to do this? Let's rewind to middle of COVID. Shopify is on a tear, e-commerce is on a tear. Shopify actually at that point was the most valuable company by market capitalization on the Canadian Stock Exchange and our Canadian publicly traded company. And that's, Shopify was in a fierce battle for Amazon to win e-commerce. And that's when they got into logistics. They also kept on hiring significantly. If you go back to 2021, they had a slogan, 2021, we're going to hire 2021 engineers. Growth at all cost. Let's become big. Let's fulfill our market capitalization. COVID, let's get becomes less lockdown stop. COVID, I will say COVID's endemic now. I'm not gonna say it's gone away. And the e-commerce growth returns a trend. So it means e-commerce slows down, it has slower market penetration. The market interest rates go up and markets punish shares of negative cash flow companies, which Shopify is one of. So all of a sudden, you had a bunch of tailwinds that turned to headwinds. And Shopify is a company that's still performing extremely well, but the market longer is no longer accepting is accepting basically negative cash flow or growth at all cost. So I think what happened in July, it was a quick reaction saying, okay, where is, for lack of a better word, the fat or non-core projects, and let's get rid of that. And my guess is, Shopify has done a deeper review, and I think Toby said this morning that. There's nice to have side projects, but it's better to focus on your core. And they must have determined that they're better off partnering with someone like Flexport that handles logistics. It's a lower margin business. It's more complex to spin that off. It wasn't strategic for them to win this space. And there's other things they can do by building better software. So, and probably there was a lot of projects which either had too many people dedicated or were no longer needed. So they called it down with the idea that let's break this down. So logistics is important to their merchants, but they probably figured it's better to have a third party that focuses on that. It was probably lowering down their overall valuation because of lower margin, more capital intensive business. So if you look at the market trying to value Shopify, you have this SaaS software or payments company, which is high margin, low capital intensity, and this logistics business, which requires warehouses, low margin. So just evaluation, even if they were both cash flow positive, we're better to split out and get a higher valuation on both. So that's And they probably thought they could have a good, strong partnership that lets them compete. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is they're trying to get the cash flow positive, my guess, right? So let's show profits. Let's show that we have healthy growth. And so they had to part ways with, unfortunately, 20% of the company.
So obviously human cost here, which is obviously never a great thing to be talking about. I was surprised given that they had exceeded various targets that they had set for themselves. And 20% is a large number. What do you think this implies for the future and the implications here going forward?
So a couple things. First, the immediate reaction from the market to this news was a 25% bump in share price. So they appear, at least in the short run, in a market's horrible making short-run decisions, you should see what the long-term trend is, that people basically view this as a positive for Shopify.
Okay.
So I think what the long-term implication is that, you know, as we return to normal, which I'd say we've started doing it, if we're not there yet, that companies are going to get rewarded for growth, but also have to show cash flow.
Yeah.
So I think what you're going to get out of this is companies that are more focused. As they get bigger, they're going to be as much focused on the bottom line as growth. And they're going to focus on where they can really win and have a differential outcome. So I think with this, I think this is actually, you know, it's healthy for Shopify in the long run because they're growing rapidly and they continue to grow rapidly with less people, you know, and you've seen this across Facebook, Twitter, maybe we wouldn't say Twitter's healthy, but, you know, Amazon, everyone's had excess fat, and I hate to call people fat, but like they just had too much people, too many projects, and everyone's going to be leaner, meaner, and it'll set a stronger base to continue to grow. And hopefully Shopify will become the most valuable market cap company in Canada again. I mean, for employees, I think, you know, I would not look at this as these employees were not good. I would just look at them that many employees were in things that were no longer deemed strategic, or they didn't want to invest in the growth because it's too far out. Or so like if you were in the logistics and doing software for logistics team and you were laid off, it's more an implication of what a company's priorities are than the capabilities of that person.
Do you have any final takeaways and learnings for anyone that's listening or watching?
So I think in the current market, you know, there's a saying in startups, you know, investors will always tell their founders, you're better off to do one cut than multiple cuts because it's, you know, just rip the Band-Aid off and get back to work. I think in the current environment, it's been hard for larger companies to understand just how deep to cut. I think lots of companies did the first cut saying, hey, you know, markets have changed. What, you know, valuations are down. We don't have to grow as fast. So we got a bit ahead of our skis and let's cut. And now as, you know, I think they see where the market's ending up. And I actually do believe there's, while we're not in recession, the growth is not as quick as before. Companies are taking a second cut. So hopefully, you know, whenever possible, you're better off doing one cut and calling it, but it's hard to do. I think second of all, have some empathy and reach out to people that you know that have got bad news today or any day. And I think, you know, this may be a net positive for the ecosystem over a long term because Shopify is a darling. It's grown fast. It's shown ambition. So lots of people being trained and seeing what great looks like, they can now go add value and help other companies grow faster. And so maybe it's time to reach out to one of those, either reach empathy and maybe offer a job if you think that if you need a full role.
Yeah. I think that's a great point to end on just with this. And obviously as we find out more, we learn more, we'll keep everyone updated. We'll include a full rundown of this story with any further updates for tomorrow's newsletter as well. A raise that may or may not be happening. There's not a ton, I guess, known of what's actually going to transpire with this. So it's the Cohere news. So what's the news and also what's the rumor surrounding this raise?
I'll say this. I've seen conflicting news. So once again, Globe Mail reported that Cohere is an advanced talks raise, $250 million USD at a $2 billion valuation. What's interesting is New York Times also has an article, which seems to imply the round's done.
Okay.
The rumor from Globe Mail's perspective is Eyenovia is leading the round with participation from NVIDIA and, you know, previous investors, which include Index Ventures, Radical Ventures, and Tomvest Ventures.
And this kind of is deja vu a little bit. I mean, there was something similar involving Cohere, I should say, just earlier this year, correct?
Yeah. Globe Mail was reporting in February that the round was coming together at a $6 billion valuation. And if you asked around the community, the rumor was that Google was leading the round.
And so why is Cohere, are they so talked about? Why is this exciting? Why are they interesting?
You know, so Cohere is one of the startups building the core technologies platform for the new AI rush. So, you know, these large language models, they've developed their own, which they make available to customers who use their technology to incorporate it to, you know, improve processes and make new products like generative AI, chatbots. You know, while OpenAI is getting all the attention and market awareness in this rapidly growing space, it's, I don't know if it's a winner-take-all space, and Cohere has great technology and lots of customers.
I want to focus now on the amount that they're talking about raising, so $250 million US. So why is such a large raise required?
So this goes back to like traditional software. They're building a horizontal platform that wants to provide like the underlying infrastructure. So what do you need for that? You need two things. You need a lot of people to do the R&D, and these people are expensive. There's not a lot of them. And second of all, what's interesting here is when they provide a service, they have to provide compute, and it's not, in both cases, there's a lot of CapEx and scale and lots of fixed costs, which allow lots of variable cost, eventually minimal variable cost, but there is a significant cost of developing this from both a people perspective and a compute cost.
And just because we don't, when we say like may or may not be happening, just because we don't really know, we don't have all the information, why is information at all available? Okay. Why is it being leaked, if you will?
So my pure speculation, I don't know if this is like a lawyer, I don't know if this is people at Cohere, I don't know if this is one of the investors.
Okay.
I feel there's potentially two reasons to leak these deals ahead of time. The deal's stalling and a lot of parties want to get this done, and this puts public pressure to move faster, or the terms aren't set, the round's not set, and someone's trying to negotiate terms in public and leak it to the other side without telling them. Neither of these are, this is pure speculation. There's no guarantee these are happening. But my perspective of this is what is going on. Mm-hmm. At least the February did not work in February, because this rumored valuation is down 66% from the previous rumored valuation.
Just a couple final points. Hearing that Google's potentially involved is very interesting, but what's interesting about the potential investors that are involved?
So the previous rumor had Google leading mm-hmm. or active an investor. This one has supposedly NVIDIA. Both are, do have venture capital, corporate cap, venture capital arms, but both are suppliers to Cohere. Google supplies compute power, NVIDIA provides chips. So it's interesting because as this company has more money to invest, it's going to go circular back to those operating companies and be strong customers for it. So it's a way to benefit from the potential capital gains and upside, but also get you revenue from a customer.
And just lastly, what are some takeaways and learnings for our community from this news?
As most founders have learned over the years, a deal is not done until the paperwork is signed and the money is in the bank. Nevertheless, I believe where there's smoke, there's usually fire. So something is happening.
Okay.
And this is also a reminder, despite all you've heard about ChatGPT, all you've heard about OpenAI, all you've heard about Cohere, we're still in the early days of LLMs. And, while OpenAI looks like it has a crown and is the king, we have a great Canadian contender that can, maybe knock it off and become the champion.
I think that's also another good takeaway to hit home. I think we touch on that a lot about, a deal is not done until all of those things are checked off, especially money in the bank, contract signed, everything. So just a good wrap up, I think, of what we should be paying attention to and also what we can potentially expect to come from this. So just before we go into our next headline, I want to just talk about the newsletter a little bit. We're continuing to make a lot of updates to our formatting, how we're presenting our content, techtio.org/newsletter. It's, as always, a really great resource to learn something new, get an intro to companies that might not have a lot of traction in the ecosystem. Great way to learn about founder stories and advice to building their businesses. Anything you want to highlight, Alex, that we've done?
Well, I like that we're doing more how-tos and talking about alumni mafias.
Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at CPSA. You're passionate about your tech solution. We're passionate about helping you sell it. Learn proven techniques for prospecting, negotiating, pitching, and client relationship to close more business and grow your market share with membership in the Canadian Professional Sales Association. Start your free trial at the link in our show notes. Next headline. So super.com raises a supersize round, pretty self-explanatory with this headline, but hoping you can share a bit more insight. So what is the news around this one?
So again, I love parsing equity and debt. So this was a $60 million US equity round and $25 million in a credit facility led by Novia, with an interesting participation from a quote unquote super group of angels, including execs from Shopify, Ancestry.com, Slack, Substack, and other companies you may have heard of.
And another question I really like to ask, I think a lot of people are interested in, is just what allowed them to raise? How did this come together? What was the process?
So Super is actually an interesting company. It started off as a travel site,
Yes.
and it was offering deals. And then it found traction with an underserved market in the States. I'd say lower income Americans who are price sensitive started using it. And then Super started to really understand, do customer development and understand this underserved market, then got into offering other goods, and then eventually he's now led to it offering a car cashback card. So it's now positioned itself as a super app, offering a lot of services to lower income Americans. It has 5 million customers, it's projecting $1 billion in GMV this year, 100 million net revenue. And so you're looking at why could it raise? It seems to have positioned itself really strong as a super app in a specific underserved market in the States where it can grow rapidly. So a strong base, tailwinds, the ability to grow. It doesn't seem like there's much competition. This all looks like a great investment to continue to scale.
Yeah, and the I mean the pivot and the growth story is really interesting to me. What else is really unique to you about this strategy for them?
A couple things. I think it's you don't it, this is an underserved customer. That's not an obvious one. If you were to ask, many engineers and teams at startup companies would have little ability to, understand this customer offhand, and they probably would assume that the unit economics wouldn't be worthwhile. But the company here saw the opportunity and then really has positioned themselves well. And the one thing they do beyond customer development, which is very interesting, and if we have, maybe we'll put a short link in our show notes, is we had Hussein, the founder, talk at recently at a tech TO.
Best of,
And
yeah.
he was talking about how they once a year they take their employees and make them put them in the shoes of their customer. Say, hey, you have to survive. Here's money. You have to survive the next 4 days. Here's the limitations. Go book a hotel. So let's see what it's like from our customers. See what's different than what you expected. So they've built a lot of empathy and understanding of who their customers are and how
Yeah.
to serve them, and have built that into the app. And I think it's going beyond customer development and understanding your customer, which has allowed them to build a winning product.
That was one of the coolest, most unique stories I've ever heard for trying to understand who your customer is. And I'm really glad that he was able to showcase that it's something that's built into their business model and how they continue to improve their product. And I think a lot of founders can take note from that. Any final takeaways from this news for our community?
So I think over the last 10 years, there's two things that I sort of like, they're nice, and I sort of don't always agree with them.
Okay.
One is, your career should be something, find something you're passionate about, that should be your career.
Yep.
I believe that's, blatantly wrong approach in life. Sometimes you can be passionate about what your career is, but it doesn't necessarily
Interesting. Okay.
start with one way or another. The other one is solve your own problem. And I would argue that this is proof of, why you might not want to solve your own problem. Many engineers have well-paying jobs, and this is not a problem they may have faced, as I can't afford to put a deposit in the hotel when I stay there. So there's a lot of problems that we're solving that aren't your own problem.
I think a lot of great businesses and ideas have come out of filling a gap and solving a problem. I think those are two really great takeaways. So next headline. So interpreting bad news and what it means for the community. So there were several announcements recently that weren't the most positive news. Can you get into just what those announcements were?
So just in the last week, there's been a few announcements, like two fintech companies shut down. That's Pillar and Billy. RenoRun, who we talked about previously, went
We
into
did.
bankruptcy, actually is shutting down and selling assets. And then again, if you talk to VCs or founders, there's lots of rumors of later stage companies getting recapped.
And so we have had a few folks in our community are interested in, so we know why we've combined these together, but can you explain what the differences in these announcements are?
Yeah, so I think lots of people go, aren't these all the same thing? And there's actually a bit of nuance
Right.
here. So I'd say I've put them in three different bullets or something like that, or three different examples, because I
Okay.
think there's what's happening here is different, and the rationale behind each of them is different. So let's take the first two. the two fintechs that are just doing a clean shutdown.
Yep.
These are both early stage companies. They haven't raised much. They most likely didn't have much revenue. Maybe some green shoots of product market fit, but either product market fit, the unit economics don't look right, that, you know, maybe founder, you know, investors have thought this is too competitive area, but these are companies that are still really young and haven't got enough investor interest or ability to cash flow positive. So they're pretty quick and painless shutdown. You know, it's never painless, but like, it's like, okay, let's move on. We're going to shut down and be done. So that, and there's a, and there's, you know, quite a few of those. Then you get two companies like Renorun that go through bankruptcy. So let's look over Renorun was before and the companies like them. They've raised a significant amount of capital. They have significant assets, a lot of customers, and they got there because there was a belief that they had a business model that could scale and be profitable. And when push came to shove, they weren't cash flow positive, and investors looked at them and said, okay, we're not sure this can ever really work out and produce enough cash flow to create any type of venture scale return. So what they first step is, let's try to, you know, get rid of any debts and liabilities we own. Let's go through, you know, see if we can get a reorganization and restructure the company and come out with a more profitable business. At that point, you might get investors. But if you can't, you shut it down, you sell the assets. So these are a more complicated process. There's more stakeholders involved. And there's something that people at one point that have scaled. There's lots of customers. There's more customers impacted. There's more employees. It's just bigger. Then you have the one that these recaps, which don't usually, no one really talks about them. They won't make the press, but you hear about them. These, you know, these are companies like Renorun, but investors are like, you know what, there's something here. We believe with another 12 months and restructuring the business, we don't have to go necessarily, you don't have to go through bankruptcy. We can make this work. But you know what, the valuation entry point does not make sense for us. So what happens here is investors, new set of investors come in, or old set of investors come in and say, hey, we'll give you X dollars more, but the valuation's, you know, it's a down round, or better yet, like, you know, there's going to be some what they call structure that if previous investors don't, you know, have to come in and people have to participate to protect their former investment. But if they don't, the previous investors and maybe the founders have a lot less percent of the company than they thought they did. So it's like, let's give you another shot. Let's give you another shot on goal, but we're going to have to change the terms.
Okay. And we'd seen a bit of a lull with news like this, with sort of like shutdowns and stories of this nature. But do you expect there to be a further slowdown rather with news like this?
You know, unfortunately, I think we're going to hear a lot of this over the next 18 to 24 months.
I say it might be hard to answer, but yeah.
You know, it's, look, a lot of companies raised money in 2021 and early 2022. Once the market got tougher, like you saw with Shopify in July, they changed their hiring plans. They lowered their burn rate and have given themselves more time to either get product market fit or grow into their valuation. Unfortunately, for not a small portion of them will not work out. And it'll just, you know, it's going to be spread out over the next 18 to 24 months, the news.
Right. Okay. And I mean, we know that this business is hard and it's risky, and there's a good chance that things aren't going to work out and businesses won't survive and there will be shutdowns. Is there any final takeaways or reassurance you would have?
So listening? Like you said, startups are risky. They don't all work, and that's okay. That's why there's upside extraordinary returns. Well, you know, but in 2021 and the early part of 2022, people forgot that and put a lot of cash into this ecosystem. So nothing was going wrong. So what we're doing is we're having the normal percent of companies fail. Yep. It's just they've been backlogged. So it's going to be a bigger percent than it should be right now. So this is part of the normal process. It's just going to look worse than it is. And it's just a reminder that nothing's guaranteed when you do a startup.
For our lightning round, just before we wrap things up, so there's two funding announcements that we're combining into one. And I know you have a bit of a personal take on this as well. So what are the announcements and why are they interesting?
So Adeia announced a $25 million USD round led by Threshold Ventures and Monograph Capital. Viv Machines announced a $4.3 million USD round led by Thrive Ventures. So first of all, full disclosure, I personally invested out my fund in both of these in the pre-seed with my fund and 49P. But the real reason I found this interesting is both have female co-founders.
Yep.
You know, I expect to see, you know, lots of industries try to focus on getting, you know, closing the gap or moving the needle or whatever you want to say. I think there's a pipeline of early stage founders going to start raising, and you're going to see that gap get closed, not as fast as I'd like, but it's happening. And second of all, these are both, they're both serving traditionally industries that are hard to raise money for and are a bit underserved. ODS is serving pharma with tech, and Vivid Machines is serving ag tech or agriculture. And both are big industries and tend to be a bit slightly underrepresented. So just an investment. So it's good to see that both are being able to raise money.
Yeah. And I always like to ask you trends that we should be aware of or what you're seeing in the ecosystem, but any funds that you think we should be aware of?
Well, I guess there was an interesting, you know, you're starting to see some funds make announcements about first close. You had the 51 close $30 million to finance ag tech and food tech. So spot on with the Vivid Machines. Mm-hmm. They're investing pre-seed to A round. What's interesting, the 51 was supposed to be originally launched as a female founder focused fund and has now gone focused to a category and is now just saying they're focused on inclusivity and diversity. Yep. So they will do male founders, but they do ag and food. BrightSpark, who's been around forever, has had a few different models, has announced a first close of a $60 million for a new fund. So it's just good to see there's money out there.
Absolutely. And it's nice to see that a lot of these rounds that are coming together, it's companies, as you said, it's serving traditionally underserved markets, but let alone a massive demand, obviously, for what they're doing. Thanks, Alex. Before I let you go, just a couple events we want to share with our community that are coming up. May 24th, Retail TO is back. We haven't done one in a while, so that'll be great to have that return again on May 24th at 111. And we're back in Vancouver at the end of the month on May 29th to do a sort of like a tech social. And as always, like, tickets available on our website, techto.org. I'll be sharing a lot of info around them in upcoming newsletters and on social. Alex, thanks for your time, as always, helping us break it down. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another edition of TechTO Quick Takes. And until then, we'll see you on the inside.
We're in the business of delivering impossible things. We're in the business of delivering things that nobody's ever seen before.
If you build that culture, you'll come up with, you know, really cool and innovative stuff, and, you know, literally could be in the next multi-billion dollar idea.
So this conversation is largely going to be about scaling yourself and scaling your leadership team.
I want to talk about one of the biggest struggles that I think a lot of startups face early on, which is building initial traction.